I'd like to call the April 21st Senate Resources Committee meeting to order. Committee members present are Senator Ben Stevens, Senator Stedman, Senator Seekins, Senator Elton, Senator Kukesh, Senator Dyson, myself, Senator Wagoner. Order of business today is going to be Senate Bill 170. We'll be up first. We'll be taking public testimony on Senate Bill 170. After we're done with 170, we're going to go, if we have time, on to Senate Bill 314. So with that, I think we had a presentation from the bill sponsor last week. And with that, unless the bill sponsor has additional,
that's cool,
anything additional to present, we'll go public testimony.
Go for it.
Okay, first up in public testimony, we have Clark Whitney and Soldatna. I want to ask people to refine their remarks and keep them to about 3 minutes if we could. Mr. Whitney, go ahead.
Senate Resource Committee members, my name is Clark Whitney. I'm a master guide and a 43-year resident of Alaska. My wife and I have been involved in providing outdoor services for hunters and fishermen for over 25 years in Units 9, 17, and 19. It's been a rewarding time for us, as well as providing a large part of our income and for those who work for us, as well as the many agencies and companies we utilize in supporting this business. My comments today are primarily concerned with the units I indicated, 9, 17, and 19. However, I feel the issues are of great concern statewide. As you're aware, our ungulate population is in trouble. It's had a dramatic effect on our business. Last year, we didn't book one moose hunter, and this was a partial effort to help rebuild the moose population. The caribou herd has dropped from 200,000 to around 80,000 animals. Our last major source of income, honey income, is provided by the brown bear. Should units 9 and 17 be declared an intensive management area and guide required requirement be dropped, the financial impact on the registered master guides in those units would be devastating. A large part of 19 is already under intensive management. The number of bears harvested in recent years has increased dramatically, as has the number of guides. This coupled with a predator control program initiated by the Department of Fish and Game will result in increased ungulate survival. Guides are closely regulated by various local, state, legislative, and federal agencies. They must also meet stringent insurance, registration, and reporting requirements. The industry is also working with the Big Game Commercial Services Board to improve industry standards. The many ramifications of this bill would impose severe financial handicaps on a viable guiding industry, as well as hardship on our Department of Fish and Game Management, and negate the hard work of many people necessary for the proper control and management of our wildlife resources. I'm sure Senator Seekins is very concerned with this issue. However, I would like to suggest that if he wants to make changes in fish and game matters, that he work with the various entities involved to develop a more realistic approach with those that have firsthand the knowledge. I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, Mr. Whitney. Question?
Just one.
Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Whitney, are you aware of the efforts that I've gone to work with the various organizations around the state?
Mr. Seekins, I listened to the input last week. I was here at the teleconference, and some of the material that you expressed would seem to indicate that you hadn't worked extensively with some of the members, and I am a member of APHA, and I got the indication that there were times when you had not worked closely with that group.
Okay. Well, I don't know who told you that, but we'll get to the bottom of it. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Dale Adams in Sitka. Are you on there, Mr. Adams?
Yes, this is Dale Adams with the Southeast Alaska Guides Association. And I have three things I'd like to talk about real quick. One is the license tag fee increases for the members that we have down here. We're in favor of some kind of a license tag fee increase, but some of the numbers that we're looking at on this bill is quite extensive as far as, a lot of my clients specifically aren't wealthy people. They're people that, spend a lot of time and effort getting the resources together to make this maybe a once-in-a-lifetime chance to hunt in Alaska. And they're not always rich. And anyway, to have that kind of an increase, I believe, would drive a lot of our clients away. They'd go to Russia. They'd go hunt something else. Hunting in Alaska is something that they do with their extra funds. It's not something that they have to do. It's something that they would like to do, but there's certainly other things in the world to do for their entertainment. The other part I want to talk about is the lifting of guide required in intensively managed units. I believe opens a crack that I'm afraid once we open that crack, we may have a hard time keeping that snowball effect possibly continuing. If you have a unit that's opened in intensive management that we've lost guide required, what about right across the river, right across the boundary in the next unit? What's going to happen there if somebody feels that they should have that same opportunity to guide as a resident and there could be lawsuits there that I'm afraid once we start that ball rolling, I would just be afraid what might happen there. And along that same lines is on guide required, that law is one of the greatest things that I think for the residents' benefit in this state. It assures resident opportunity, tremendous opportunities to hunt like our sheep and our bear. If you look at a lot of the other states, the drawing odds are incredible odds to draw a bighorn tag or some of the better elk tags or anything, and the odds of going hunting in them states aren't very good. And in Alaska, we can go sheep hunting as resident every year somewheres in the state. We can go brown bear hunting every year, and it's just a tremendous thing that the residents have. And if we drop guide required, we're going to have an influx of non-residents wanting to hunt these species while the door is open. For as long as it's open, and obvious result would that be would be drawing permits, and that would curtail the resident hunt also. Anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Adams. Are there questions? Senator Seekins?
One. Mr. Adams, do you have a proposed fee schedule?
No, but we're looking at, 30, 40%, 50% possible increase would be understandable. 100, 200, 300% increase or in some of these trophy fees. When you start looking at possibly for a brown bear, by the time the guy's done paying the license tags and trophy fees, approaching, 40, 50, 60% of the cost of a hunt potentially, I don't think our clients are going to accept that.
But you don't have a suggested schedule?
No, sir.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Adams, on your experience as a guide, have you found that it's rather difficult for the novices to tell the male and female bear apart when they're hunting?
It's extremely difficult. That's one of the things that the guide is I have to be on top of. Our clients, even clients that have had extensive bear hunting experience, like on black bears in the lower 48 or in the Canadian provinces. A lot of my hunters have hunted, maybe shot 10, 20 different black bears and maybe a brown bear too. And one of my biggest jobs is to keep them from shooting something that to them they say that looks good to me. That looks good to me. I hear that all the time. And I'm looking at that animal and I'm thinking, well, and I have to put it in terms to understand. I say, well, that's a spike or that's a forked horn. So that's not something. Yeah, he's pretty. He carries himself well, but that's a 3-year-old female or that's a 3-year-old male. And you got to keep right on top of these people. Unless you have quite a few years of experience and a lot of animals under your belt, the odds of taking a sow is tremendous. It just can't be stressed enough.
And I'd also expect, and maybe you could offer some of your experience, that if we had non-guided, non-resident hunting in the Tongass, what's your impression of other hunters running into more wounded bears in the woods when we're trying to go out and hunt our deer or whatever we're doing out there to feed our family?
Well, that would increase dramatically. We have a new regulation now. If you wound one, you're done hunting. And part of that is come from that actually came from the guide to the Board of Game. And I hear all the time, I hear my clients say, I can hit him from here. And any guide in the state of Alaska that's worth his salt, which I'd say 95% of them have a 100-yard rule, we do not shoot over 100 yards. And our clients have a hard time understanding that. They'll say, I shoot prairie dogs at 1,500 yards. I shoot this at, 1,000 yards. Well, these aren't prairie dogs. These are got a lot more value than that. We respect them a lot more than that. And we want to be 100 yards, we want to have a good rest, and we want to make sure that that bear is dead. And the non-resident don't look at that way. He thinks he can shoot a deer at 300, 400, 500 yards, that brown bear is bigger, he can hit it. And we see that all the time, and the wounding loss would be tremendous. It just, we see that in the black bear down on QU and Kuprinoff. We see the transported and the unguided hunters that are taking long pot shots at these bears. They're not close enough to differentiate between male and female. They're certainly not close enough to make an assured shot in the killing zone. They say, I can hit it from here. I'm sure you could maybe hit it from here. That's what I'm afraid of. They're going to hit it and not kill it.
Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Adams, can someone who lives here 12 months, are they a better shot than someone who hasn't? Or are they more capable of being able to judge size or sex because they've lived here 12 months than someone who hasn't?
Only to the extent if they've heard enough stories and understand if they know somebody that they've talked to, that local guide or somebody maybe they've rubbed shoulder with, to hear the horror stories, maybe they have an appreciation that a non-resident wouldn't have. But there's certainly, unless you have a lot of experience out there and have taken multiple bears or more, it's going to be very difficult for anybody, whether they're resident or non-resident, to differentiate male, female, and size.
So should there be a resident require, I mean, a guide requirement for residents?
No, I don't believe there should be a guide required for residents. I believe us as residents should have some rights in this state to do things, but that is a tricky area. I mean, there's certainly education could be part of the program to where some of the residents may be better coached. I know down here, Jack Whitman, our biologist that we had in Sitka, he came up with a little brochure, you know, describing the male, female, and mortality rates, and very helpful, and something like that could certainly be helpful, but nothing takes the place of an experienced guide that has been out in the field multiple trips, that have seen these scenarios and can keep a handle on what's going on in this situation.
Mr. Adams, this is Senator Wagner. I want to go back. There was a little bit of discussion earlier about the fees. What would you say would be, you know, fees haven't been raised for a number of years.
Since 92.
Senator Seekins says since 92. What do you think would be a reasonable rate to raise the fees for non-resident guided hunters, or just non-resident hunters as far as that goes?
Well, I hear the term 45% increase in inflation rate since 92, and that may be a starting point. I haven't sit down and outlined this all out, but it certainly adds to the price of the hunt, you know, and a fee increase for our department, I think, is something that's probably needed. How much, I don't know, but that could be a starting point, maybe at 45% or something like that.
Let me ask you another question. Senator Seekins, I talked about this quite a bit the other day. If we're going to go to our non-resident hunters with fee increases, I've asked the department to come forward with a recommendation and justification of why we don't charge our own hunters. Senator Seekins and I looked at Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Montana, other states. In Washington, I know deer were $39 and some cents, and so were elk.
For tag fees.
So, you know, our residents are getting a free skate, no tag fee charge, and one of the ideas behind the increase in this fees is to get a better predator control program and get things going a little bit. What would you guys feel about that? Guides.
I believe, yeah, residents paying a little more of their share, I think, would be a good thing. I think the trade-off would be good as far as, just like you said, there'd be more money in the state to deal with some of these predator issues. I don't see anything wrong with it. I could see some advantage as far as maybe some of the hunting that's done, you know, where one or two guys are killing a lot of deer for different people, and maybe that would slow a little bit of that illegal stuff down if they actually had a tag to affix to the deer. I don't know. I don't do a whole lot of resident hunting on my own, a little bit, but mostly in the guiding so much that I don't have much time to do that, unfortunately. But I can certainly see where an increase for residents would not be out of line.
Okay, thank you. Additional questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Adams.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Wayne Heimer in Fairbanks.
My name is Wayne Heimer. I live at 1098 Chena Pump Road here in Fairbanks, and I'm speaking for myself. I have 25 years of experience. I'm retired from the Department of Fish and Game, and in the years since my retirement, I've been an outside observer of the department, and I think I know something about the ADF&G culture. I think we're here because the decisions the department has made over the last 20 to 25 years are clearly not obviously within the constitutional mandate. When the Constitution was new, there weren't any modern notions about what wildlife and fisheries management was. Now there are. Similarly, when Title 16 of the Alaska Statutes was passed, there was no real need to define the functions of the commissioner, which are to manage, protect, improve, and extend the fish and game resources of the state, because those definitions were commonly understood. That's no longer the case, and now confusion about what it means to manage or to protect or extend reigns. The commissioner is willing to defend his autonomy, even to the extent of arguing against passing a bill that would give him a license fee increase. The legislature, on the other hand, at least the sponsor of this bill, seems to want to tie him to the original intent of the Constitution, which has been well defined by Coghill and Campbell in a study on sustained yield that probably was published 10 years ago. I think much of the controversy and strife over SB 170 is a matter of perception. The philosophical differences seem to be, shall we be tradition or modern, which apparently is the sponsor's intent in our approach to wildlife management, shall we be traditional or modern, or shall we persist in a postmodern direction, which is seems to be what the department prefers at this time. I think a bunch of the confusion and ill will could be mitigated if we would define right up front what the functions of the commissioner are, and I'd recommend that that language be changed to duties because it's more directive. And I believe we need to define management, protection, improvement, and extension. Those are very early in the bill, and I think that would help us get toward agreement at the end if we only knew what we were doing to start with. I have some language that I'd be happy to share with you that friends of mine and I have worked up on defining those terms. And other than that, I am done. Thank you.
The sponsor told me that he already has that language. So thank you, Mr. Heimer. Are there questions?
And Mr. Heimer, as well as Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Heimer, that's the information that you did give to me already on those definitions?
Yes.
Okay. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, you know, as a professional wildlife person yourself, your primary background was in what? Sheep?
Doll sheep originally, from there into general management, and from there into state-federal relations.
Just from your observations in terms of management of our wildlife in the state of Alaska, how are we doing?
I don't think we're doing very well, and I think that's because we are confused by what it means to manage, and we have pretty much lost the will to manage. I lay much of that to the federal takeover of management on federal lands.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Stedman?
I think statehood had something to do with federal involvement in some of our fisheries and stuff, but one of the questions, and I should have asked it earlier, to the other caller, Mr. Adams, he'd had a better feeling for it, but we should look into it anyway. My understanding is that the Forest Service is restricting access into the Tongass for the guides and the amount of bears that can be hunted through some federal control issues, and I don't know how the bill would fit in allowing non-resident, non-guided hunting within the Tongass. I don't know if that's been explored yet or a whole different scenario down here. We don't have the predators we have is the bears trying to eat us when we're out deer hunting on occasions. Maybe not eat us, but knock us around a little bit and take our deer. It's a whole different ballgame than up north where you have problems with black bear. So has that been looked at all, the impact of the Forest Service? Or?
No, Mr. Chairman, no, it would be a non-commercial type of an operation rather than a commercial operation. And from what I understood, the restrictions were on commercial operations, but maybe I'll look into it more.
Additional questions of Mr. Heimer? This time we'll go down to Homer to Dave Lyon.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Dave Lyon. I'm formerly a guide. I've guided 8 years out in Wood Pictic area. Right now I'm representing the Alaska chapter of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Thank you for taking time to consider SB 170. I assume that most of you have seen paperwork that I emailed and faxed to you. I checked your offices and it should be in your packet. ABHA is a dedicated group of hunters and anglers seeking to ensure Alaska's outdoor traditions in a manner that promotes the importance of wild places for wild animals and fish that has so come to define our last frontier. ABHA supports the license and tag fee increases originally requested by the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for their straightforward two-page hunting and trapping license fee increase proposal of January 25th. This is supposed to be a hunting license and tag fee increase bill. That's all it initially was. The rest of this bill addresses the issue in Alaska of demand of moose and caribou exceeding the supply. This bill attempts to mandate an increase in the supply of ungulates as well as an increased human harvest. To put things in perspective, hunter success rates for moose populations in Alaska at high densities average around 35%. For every 100 hunters in the field, 35 are successful when moose are at high densities. The reasons for this are the moose don't conveniently line up by the sides of roads and rivers for harvest, but they're also out there in the vast expanses of boreal forest and tundra and bog and hilltop found in every game management unit. Say that we mandate in a game management unit that has 10,000 square miles in size that we have maximum carrying capacity of moose, along with at least one-third harvest of these moose annually. In order to achieve this, we'd have to have hunters by the untold thousands covering nearly every nook and cranny, ridge, bog, river, and road within the unit. By mandating these biologically unsound maximum densities of moose along with high harvest, we would ensure widespread habitat damage, user conflicts, and assuredly we'd force the Board of Game into making much more of the state into controlled use areas to stop this kind of damage. Unless there's a rigorous monitoring of population numbers, habitat quality, weather effects, and constant adaptive management in light of new information being gathered, the idea of a steady level of harvest and sustained populations is scientifically unsound. You'd have to go to a biologist to get a protocol for such monitoring. The amount of study and monitoring needed would be enormous, as would the amount of funding required to make sure the necessary science is being carried out in support of the program. Managing for maximum sustained yield of caribou or moose in large variable habitats is like playing Russian roulette with game populations. One bad winter could be enough to decimate a herd. We're not managing white-tailed deer in cornfields. We keep taking more and more authority for managing our fish and game away from fish and game with their trained biologists and managers who know best about wildlife management and putting it in the hands of politicians. We say let fish and game do their job, support them with adequate funding, and stress adaptive management over intensive management. We support the original funding proposed as requested by fish and game and no changes or additions to Title 16. We strongly oppose any compromise at all that would amend or add to Title 16 statutes beyond the required amendment that deals with license and tag fee increases and transparency via annual budget reports made available online. I have a conclusion. In conclusion, I'd like to say that lost my paperwork and I'm very embarrassed.
Take your time.
There it is. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game needs a license and tag fee increase to keep up with inflation and carry on their necessary duties and mission. Transparency and budget reporting by Fish and Game are warranted so the public can see how funds are spent, but we should not tie any license and fee and tag fee increases in budget reporting to specific mandates in Title 16 amendments and additions that force the department into practicing and promoting biologically unsound or unscientific management practices. Alaska backcountry hunters and anglers cherish the peace, solitude, challenge, tradition, freedom, and health of the backcountry experience in the wild place of Alaska and recognize the need for prudent, long-term, adaptive wildlife management of all species by an adequately funded Division of Wildlife Conservation. We're hunters and anglers devoted to family and to passing on these traditions to our future generations. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Lyons. Questions? No questions. Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to Rod Arnold in Fairbanks.
Thank you, members of the Senate Resource Committee. My name is Rod Arnold. I'm the director of the Alaska Outdoor Council, which is 52-member club, 2,500 individual members with a total membership of 12,000. First, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your work on this legislation. Mr. Chairman, this is the first committee of referral for this legislation. I haven't seen too many bills that were perfect in their first committee. The way the system works is this legislation goes through a process of hearings in different committees. Mr. Chairman, I say that you've done your job with SB 170. You've heard it in Juneau, Fairbanks, Anchorage. You've heard it in northern communities, western Alaska. You've built an impressive public record. And now I urge you to pass it out of committee today, pass it on to another set of eyes to further refine the language. I know that there are differences of opinion on this bill, Mr. Chairman, but from the largest group of hunters in the state, let me tell you that the system is broken. There is not, this is not, I repeat, a vote of no confidence in our current commissioner or the department. To the contrary, after 10 years, I think we finally have the right governor and the commissioner to make needed positive changes in Title 16. On your desk, you have a page that says result of the 2005 spring permit hunt drawing. This just came out on the department's website. For those of you who aren't familiar with this, these columns illustrate how many people, mostly Alaskans, applied for permits to hunt last year, and then how many people got permits. Then there's a column that shows the percentage of people who wanted meat and actually got to go after it. Think of this page as a renewable resource demands page. Hunters buy license. Some of the money for those licenses goes to the Fish and Game Fund. That money is supposed to be used to manage. And when I say manage, I mean grow more animals that they would like to hunt and eat. You'll notice the column that says MD with a number behind it. Those are moose hunts. Look at MD 404. 6,000 people put in for a permit to go out and shoot a moose. Of that 6,000, 30 of them got permits. That's 1%. I mentioned the Fish and Game Fund monies that are used to manage, money that comes from hunting licenses. Who's going to go buy a license when you have a 1 or 2% chance of accepting even drawing a permit, let alone actually shooting one? This whole thing should be self-supporting. Should be lots of moves, lots of money, lots of management. Instead, this year the department doesn't have enough fish and game funds. That thanks to the governor's budget requesting general fund money and support from the Outdoor Council, AFN, UFA, to try to get more money into the department. The license crease, its funding is needed. Mr. Chairman, I'm in Fairbanks today and through the weekend at the sports show here. I was in Anchorage earlier this month at the Sullivan and the Matsu before that. Hundreds of people have come up to our AOC booth. I've known some I haven't. By far the biggest question on these people's minds are what is it going to take to try to get the harvest objectives that are in statute that the board uses based on historic data of harvest? What are we going to do to reach those historic data indicating that we can't harvest that much wild food harvest for Alaskans? I know it's late in the session, but we only have this one vehicle, SB 170. Pass it out. We'll continue to work on it with the sponsor, the department, and other user groups, whoever wants to work on it. But please, don't underestimate the frustration out there with the status quo. That concludes my comments. Thanks again, Mr. Chairman.
Questions, Mr. Arnold? Thank you very much for your testimony. Next testifier is Stevens Perrins.
Yes, thank you. My name is Steve Perrins. I'm a resident of Anchorage, Alaska. I'm a master guide. I've been guiding in Alaska for almost 30 years. I'm currently in Kodiak today. I'm just getting ready to go into camp here in the next couple hours with a hunter. And I think the timing of this is pretty poor for a lot of guides that are out in the field with spring season. I own and operate Rainy Pass Lodge in Unit 16, which has seen a fair amount of its trouble with wolves and bears, and the ungulate population is down. I think that Fish and Game has gone through some great strides trying to fix that. The wolves that harvested in the last couple of years have made some great strides toward that. We've already seen the populations slowly, and I repeat slowly, starting to drop or increase on the ungulates and definitely decreasing on the wolves and the bears. The loss of guides, the requirement for losing the guides in those intense management and the loss of that industry would be devastating. The tag increases proposed by Senator Seekins would be so out of line in the industry that we would lose a multitude of hunters to other areas, which is just going to snowball this effect of loss of revenue in that industry as well. We talked about, or I heard testimony about 45% increases in inflation, and yet Senator Seekins' proposals are in some cases as high as 500 and 600% over the next five-year period of time. As a resident, I pay less than $65 for hunting, fishing, and trapping license. I don't trap, but I buy that license as a maximum license every year. I've got several of my children have five boys, and several of them buy the same license to help support Fish and Game. I'm sitting here with a client in the last several hours that's down here on Kodiak to hunt. I asked him about what he pays in Texas. He pays $63 for hunting and fishing license. He's allowed to shoot four deer, up to six deer rather, and four turkeys on that license. In Alaska, I'm able to shoot just under 20 big game animals for a $63 license. I've had a free ride for a long time, and I do believe it's time that the residents start paying their fair share. Maybe it's time we get an increase and start paying for the mistakes we've made. And I'd like to say by voting in some representatives, but I think it's probably by not voting. A lot of people that haven't voted have put us where we're at in past the past legislation that we've had. We need to make some fixes. I think we need some increases. We cannot stand 500 to 600% increases. The resident fees need to go up. The non-resident fees, I agree, could sustain some increases, and I would recommend that possibly those be more in line with a 15% increase over the next 5 to 6 years, 15% every other year, just as your proposals were to do that in two-year increments. What the biologists and the Fish and Game Department, in cooperation with professionals, other professionals in those field areas that report back to Fish and Game with their clients what's going on in the areas, because they have a vested interest in there. Let Fish and Game do that job in cooperation with those organizations. I think that some of the non-guided proposals in these areas, I personally feel that some of this is self-serving for some people and is definitely not taking into consideration the decrease in revenue that that could have for the industry. It's the guides and the outfitters that go outside the state, spend our hard money, promote our industry here in Alaska, and bring those hunters back into the field here and justify those fees. It's the direction of organizations like the APHA that have come up with programs to try and help increase monies that can be used in this state with the non-resident conservation funds, that they suggest that their members go out and try to help raise money for these things. And I think we need to work more in cooperation with them and not try to hammer us with a 500 or 600% increase, but give the non-residents something back for their money. The industry is certainly not what it was 30 years ago, and I think we need to give them something back before we start hitting them left and right. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Question for Mr. Perrins.
I have one.
Senator Seekins.
Mr. Perrins, are you familiar, did you hear the testimony on where the suggested license fees came from?
You mean the last, the bill that I was trying to testify on here a couple weeks ago, or the original ones back in January?
Well, the license fees that are on this bill now, are you familiar with where they came from?
No, I'm familiar with just looking over the bill as I had a one-day notice about 2 weeks ago.
OK. thing.
Where do they come from?
Well, they came from the Anchorage Advisory Committee. That was their recommendation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The trophy fees included, as well as the 500 to 600% increase?
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's a mistake.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Perrins. Next, go to Kodiak to Jim Hamilton.
I'm sorry, Mr. Hamilton had to step out, so pass on, please.
All right. Did he say he's coming back?
He didn't say, so I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, if he comes back, let us know.
I sure will.
Next, we'll go to Mark Wagner.
Yes, Senators, thanks for the time for me to give my testimony here. I'm a registered guide, and I do primarily most of my hunts on the islands Adak or Caribou. I'm opposed to many aspects of SB 170, and I'll just list a couple of them at this time. My biggest concern with this is the tag increases fees that are projected out into the future for non-resident tags. As a guide, I attend several sportsman shows each year to sell my hunts. And my biggest competition at these shows for caribou hunts are Canadians. I charge $4,600 for my hunts. By the time they buy their license for one caribou and tag, that's an additional $400 or so. They've got $500 into the hunt and the tag. There's several places in Canada now, primarily Quebec, and these guys have booths right next to my booth at these shows. And these hunters can buy Canadian caribou hunts for $4,000 to about $4,900 with license and tags included for two caribou. It's really difficult for me when I've got a hunter standing there and say, you know, why should I go with you? They've looked at the airfare. It's going to cost them about the same airfare from lower 48 up to where they're hunting in Alaska is going up to Canada. So all that being the same, it's very difficult for me to market these hunts when they can go to Canada, get the hunts for essentially the same price, some cases even cheaper, and get their license and tags included, or two caribou. We have to be aware of the market, not just, consumer price index and what it's done and what tag fees have been or may be. It comes down for a guy when you're trying to sell a hunt, what else is available. The hunting opportunities worldwide have increased dramatically in the last few years. Just as a couple examples here, you can go to Africa now, 10-day hunt, 10 animals, license and trophy fees included, $4,900. You can go to New Zealand on a red stag hunt, airfare included from the West Coast, license included in this, $4,600. That's just to name a couple. Those are a couple that I'm personally aware of. I think Alaska really needs to remain aware or needs to remain competitive, and we have to keep aware of what the market is on, out there for the guiding industry is facing. The trophy fees that were proposed, I personally, just from a philosophical standpoint, find them kind of repugnant. I mean, there's game farms in some states. You can go there and they charge by the inch on various species. I don't know of any states that charge trophy fees based on the inch. And I just find that type of thing where you pay based on how big the animal is. I find that very distasteful. I do have a couple of suggestions, though, for increasing revenue. I don't find objectionable a reasonable increase in the tag fees and license fees. I think these fees that were projected, the increases projected out in the future, the next couple of years, are way out of line. But one thing I would really like the legislature to consider, if they're going to be the ones making these decisions, and I think there might be better ways to approach this, but I think you have to look at charging residents for species tags. I know of one particular resident, nice gentleman, no longer in Alaska, moved it back to Tennessee, shot in 04, shot 44 caribou. The state didn't get 1 cent out of those 44 caribou. And I realize it's kind of a possibly political hot potato to talk about instituting species tag fees for residents, but I think it's something that Alaska really needs to look at. And I don't think it would be a, most hunters are not going to find that too objectionable. They may grumble a little bit, but a lot of revenue could be raised by that. And I just think it's the right thing to do at this stage. Thank you very much.
Questions? Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, Paul Shadura.
Yes, this is Paul Shadura. I'm the executive director for the Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association. I reside in the Kenai Peninsula. And thank you, Chairman Wagner and members of the Senate Resource Committee. The Kenai Peninsula Fishermen's Association opposed Senate Bill 170 as written. We do agree with the concepts of maximum sustained yield for major fish stocks, although we would find that management of lesser stocks, the concept would be devastating for the commercial fishing industry. Meeting the commissioner's voice on policy decisions won't affect relegate current administration's policies as non-issues. The Board of Fisheries is already burdened with more political assessments than biological assessments at present. This bill would further exacerbate the decision-making process, creating more controversy and less decisions based on best available science practices. Thank you.
Questions, Mr. Shadura? Next, we have, excuse me if I don't get your name quite right, in Anchorage, Corrine Lamoureux.
Yes.
Was that right?
Yeah, my name is Corrine Lamoureux. Okay. I'm a homemaker, a hunter, fisher person, and a life spender. I'm a 37-year Alaskan resident, and I'd first like to thank you for the opportunity to express my opinion on SB 170. I think it divides Alaskans who have similar interests, jeopardizes the industry, lessens the integrity of fish and game, and provides for future challenges and losses, complicates problems that's not to fix. The very broad-based, all-encompassing bill that proposes too many sweeping changes, seriously affecting too many areas, too many people, industry service providers, and ways of life. If these changes are necessary, they should be accomplished through separate and more understandable bills dealing with the specific changes. The legislature should not set nor govern regulations or expenditures of money earned and set aside for wildlife and game management. That is among the duties of the fish and game. Yes, I agree they need to be financially accountable to someone, but many times if they have to wait for legislative approval for an expenditure, by the time the approval arrives, it will be too late. It sets out to lower the professional standards and weaken our ability to provide management by allowing legislative control to open the door for special interests to govern the wildlife and fish policies of our state that should be governed by sound support based on biology and what we have historically learned. Non-resident sportsmen, many times through a licensed, registered, or master guide outfitter, bring to Alaska's coffers over $200 million per year, and in doing so, pay for over 75% of Alaska's wildlife conservation costs. SB 170 jeopardizes this influx of money in many ways without apparent gain for the state, its people, or its wildlife and fish resources. The amount suggested for raising fees associated with licenses and big game tags are ludicrous. Non-resident sportsmen already pay acceptably higher fees than residents and bear the brunt of stocking the state fund for wildlife and fish resource management. Personally, being a resident and purchasing a license every year, I don't want to pay a higher fee, but everything else has gone up in price, so I would understand when that too went up. But for a non-resident fee to go up over 400% is way out of line. All hunters, whether residents, non-residents, or aliens, should have a big game metal locking tag for all species of big game in all areas of the state, whether intensive management or not. The locking tag is a management tool as well as a source of income to the state. How can you tell whether a harvested, untagged animal legally came from a no-tag intensive management area? Extending the seasons and expanding the bag limits rather than allowing animals to be taken without tags or stealing could effectively, fairly, and monetarily control prey populations when combined with the proposed right to sell all or portions of trophy animals. You've created an open invitation to poachers. The selling of licenses and big game tags over the internet is already a user-friendly method of purchase. SB 170 proposes a 5% discount with a $1 to $5 surcharge. Paying 5% more when purchasing from a vendor will penalize those who do not have internet access. Currently, the state keeps the 5% from web sales, and all prices are quoted the same from whatever source purchased. Waterfowl stamps are also a statewide management tool, and the federal government also uses the gathered information for waterfowl management programs. No one should be exempt from the need to purchase a stamp, whether there is a direct realization of benefit or not. There is a benefit to all areas. Muskox, if it's to be permitted without a big game tag, they should be done as all other permitted animals are. Our system is far too splintered already without having a new category of permit. First come, first serve. I favor the current permit drawing system with the establishment of preference points. SB 170 has so many errors regarding the liberalization of bear harvest that reside outside the realm of ethical standards and will do more harm to future hunting in Alaska than they will help. SB 170 seems to facilitate between charging you more and letting you do it for free, depending on who you are and where you come from. And inside the bill, you quote section 1605-255. It says the Board of Game may adopt regulations it considers necessary in accordance with AS 4462, and to promote hunting and trapping and preserving the heritage of hunting and trapping in the state. SB 170 negates this section of Alaska statutes throughout its compilation. Many areas of this bill will destroy the heritage of hunting and trapping in our state. In closing, I do see one thing created within this bill that I hold in favor. Regarding eligible persons to receive a $5 license, many cannot afford the fees for licensing, and this would be a great benefit to them and would aid them in providing for their families. Disabled persons deemed eligible will also benefit. I have a disabled daughter who had a classroom that came to me to buy fishing licenses so they could try fishing on a dual lake in Anchorage, and many of them couldn't do it because they couldn't afford to buy a license for one day so they could do it, but then they couldn't fish because they would have been not fishing legally. I think that this is a really good idea to provide this for them. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions? See no questions. We'll go on to the next testifier, Tracy Verm.
Yes, I'm sorry, Tracy Verm. I'm a master guide, and I just kind of found out about this bill very recently, so I haven't had a long time to look over it, but with the intensive management of brown bears and wolves, the big problem I see with this, just glancing at it, is that in these areas you're going to have anybody can come and hunt those, or a resident can act like a guide to a non-resident or something, and this completely undercuts a guided hunt with these fees, meaning that if we charge $10,000 for a brown bear hunt, and then if he kills a bear that has a 28-inch skull, there's an additional fee put on that. It's going to make it so it's not very attractive to come to Alaska to hunt. They'll simply go to Russia or to Canada, and it's just not well thought out for the fee structure. Thanks for your time.
Are there any questions? Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Mike Litson.
Yes, Senator Wagner, Research Committee members, thanks for letting me testify. My name is Michael Litson. I'm a 38-year resident of the state of Alaska. I'm a licensed master guide, and I reside in Nikiski. I've been involved with the guiding industry for 25 years and owned and operated my own guide and flying business as sole source of income for the last 20. I'm also a permitted pilot in the current predator management program. After looking through this bill, I have numerous objections to it. First of all, this bill is far too comprehensive, making too many sweeping changes to the industry for one bill. There will be many negative repercussions resulting from the many changes proposed in the bill as written. Changes of this magnitude should be studied further and considered by all parties that would be affected, and only then small measured steps to address the concerns that brought this bill about. And as you've heard, this is not a real good time for some of the people that are affected having a bear season on right now. Tracy's brother, Kelly, would most likely have something to say about this, but he's in the field, as a matter of fact. The increased amounts proposed for the non-resident tags are far too excessive. I feel strongly from my years in the business that cost increases of this magnitude would put hunting in Alaska out of the reach of some of the clients that I work with today. The rising costs of fuel, insurance, and general business expenses of today have already stretched many of the patrons to our state and the guide business to their limit. I support license and tag fee increases of a more reasonable nature for non-residents, as well as starting to look into the possibility of Alaska residents to start to pay a nominal amount for fees for big game tags. Years ago, when I dreamed of having the kind of business that I have today, I looked into what it would take to make my dream a reality. I studied the laws pertaining to the guiding and flying industry and made a plan to achieve my goal. Now this business supports my family and is a significant source of income for the people in my organization, as well as many service providers I routinely use. I'm adamantly opposed to allowing unlicensed people to be able to take bear hunters in some parts of the state as this bill would allow. There are reasons why there are guide required laws for some of our species and licensing standards, and why the newly formed Commercial Services Use Board is working to strengthen those existing licensing standards. It's for public safety and protecting our valuable resource. Allowing unlicensed people to do what licensed individuals are doing would be a slap in the face and would make a mockery of the system that was trusted and worked through by the legally licensed guides. A change like this would undermine our business and devalue the service that we work so hard to legally provide. I'm strongly in favor of the current predator management programs. I'm in favor of implementing them into new areas of the state where relief is needed from the predator-prey imbalances. We are starting to see positive results from the current programs, and they should have a chance to have work before initiating more radical measures. I have the utmost confidence in the existing Board of Game process as I do the expertise of the Department of Fish and Game Conservation brings to the board, and strongly believe that it should remain this way. With the bill dealing with important issues as these, there is much to be considered. Far too many possibilities exist to cause both short-term and long-term damage to the resource, the guiding industry, and the negative impact to the residents of the state of Alaska. If a bill of this nature was to go through, please help shape this to be one that addresses all of these concerns. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? Thanks for your testimony. Appreciate it. Next is, we'll go to Paul Pletch.
I have heard three quarters.
Are you?
Oh, he said they were waiting for somebody to respond. Paul Pletch, I think.
Paul Pletch on there?
This is Joe Pletch.
Oh, I've got it down, Paul. Okay, go ahead, Joe.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Yeah, my name is Joe Pletch, and I really appreciate you allowing me to testify today. A lot of, I guess, what I had initially sketched out here to talk about, other folks have already covered, and that's really helpful to me anyway. I hope it is to you. I'm a 32-year resident of Alaska Peninsula with a rural lifestyle here, hunted fish, trapped, worked as a full-time guide for all of those years. Been involved in the Fish and Game Advisory Committee process as a member for 25 years and attended many, many board of game, board of fish meetings as well. I currently serve as president of the Alaska Professional Hunters Association. You should have copies of the letter, my letter of April 11th, written on behalf of our association. And I'll begin by saying that members of the guiding industry and both hunting and sport fishing are major stakeholders in the subject matter contained in this bill. That's one of the general residents of the state. Most of us have extensive experience working throughout the state. This is much more than just a job or a business or an industry. And this bill is a lot more than just about guiding. In our case, it's about way of life. It's about our relationship with nature, about our concern for proper management of wildlife, which we hold dear. We're not professional wildlife managers. There may be a few of us out there that are, but we've always worked closely with them and especially recognized the need for them to have the resources and the tools necessary to do a thorough job. I think Ms. Lamoureux did an excellent job of discussing the economic contribution of our industry to the state, and that's long been misunderstood or underestimated. $200 million a year, it's not just money in guides' pockets, it's the money that goes out of a guide's pocket in the way of expenditures for supplies, boats, aircraft, insurance, air taxi support, license and permitting fees, and to government agencies. Currently, the numbers that we have are that up to 70% of the Division of Wildlife Conservation's budget is funded by the sale of non-resident license and tag fees. We strongly support full funding for this essential Department of Fish and Game, and you heard Dale Adams say that the Southeast guides were agreeable to, off the top of his head, up to a 30, 40, 50% increase in license and tag fees, excuse me. In my letter, I indicated a 25% increase, and essentially that's what I thought we had on paper a year ago at this time. We did not see this committee substitute until Thursday of last week with the Anchorage AC recommended numbers, which were totally different than what we thought we were dealing with last year. We also believe that it's reasonable, and as a resident, and my wife and my son think it's reasonable to see an in-state tag fee. We want to see the department get the money, and they need it desperately. Now, how that money's directed, what it goes for, is another subject, another component of this bill, which I'll address a little later. Another section of the bill would exempt brown grizzly bear hunters from the guide required provision in areas of intensive management, as you know, and I just urge you to read very carefully the letter you have from Bill Horn regarding the legal ramifications of this provision, and I really urge you, don't dismiss his analysis as just another attorney's opinion. He knows this subject as well or better than any attorney in the nation. He's dealt with it throughout the entire continental United States, from New Jersey to Oregon to everywhere, and there are very serious unintended consequences in this provision. At least we hope they're unintended. We believe this provision would, out of legal necessity, carry over to areas other than those designated for intensive management and to other guide-required species. The deciding legal issue, one of the deciding legal issues, is not whether the area is under intensive management, but rather if a resident is qualified to take non-resident, and what's more, non-resident aliens hunting for one guide required species without being licensed as a guide, why is he not qualified to do the same in other areas for other guide required species? It's a serious legal question, and we don't think we can forsake either the resource or the integrity of this process on the risk that this will increase brown bear harvest in certain areas
to the extent that it'll, we'll see a measurable difference in moose calf survival.
Mr. Clutch, I'm going to ask you to wrap up. We're running real short on time here.
Okay, very good. Moving on, in terms of this provision also, take into account the potential for abuse. Their residents would be very sincere and honest and go out and take their friends out, and that would work just fine, but I'm very certain you'd see droves of people, short-term residents and people establishing residency, to engage in barter and trade and cash under the table to get engaged in this. That being said, the provisions related to the concept of wildlife management and the Title 16 provisions, we commend where Senator Seekins wants to go with this. We are in agreement with, this is where I mean going beyond just the guiding issue, managing for abundance, sustained yield, for human use, to include predators in a management equation, absolutely essential. The legal thresholds engage in that process, we think are set entirely too high. If you reach a threshold of biological emergency, you've had a management failure. And we can't have those thresholds. Our adversaries in the anti-hunting world are using those thresholds to litigate and constrict our ability to work. And so we think there's great opportunity in this section of the bill. We also are concerned that it shouldn't go so far as to direct management plans, methods and means. That we see as a board process and a board function, and as it interrelates with how the department works. But we sure are willing to work to refine this and get it where we need to go. We're willing to look at language to do just that. So please understand that from an overview of the guiding profession, this goes well beyond just what's good for guides. It's good for residents. It's good for wildlife, and in that regard, we are in your camp. And that concludes my remarks.
Thank you, Mr. Clutch. Questions?
Just a couple of questions.
Senator Seekins.
Thank you, Joe. This is Ralph Seekins. What do you think of the second degree of kindred law?
I know its historical origin, and I think you will hear that from our executive director as well. During territorial days, for all big game species, guides were required. Then after statehood, it was referred to as a compromise, residents non-residents were allowed to hunt everything excluding brown bears, grizzly bears, polar bears, and Dall sheep. Goat was added later on. I think there are a number of residents that are quite capable and ethical and experienced enough to accompany an individual in the field and do a good job. However, they're not insured. They don't have land use authorization. They're not always aware of the ceiling and regulatory conditions related to a hunt. I think it's a provision that accommodates residents. When you get into the current guide required species, I think you're putting far too much in jeopardy.
One other question, if I can.
Senator Seekins.
You talked about the process of Board of Game. Do you think that the Board of Game should have to check with the governor's office, for example, before it authorizes a predator control program?
It would depend on the language that you would choose to put in the bill, Senator Seekins. As simply stated, no, I don't think that's necessarily appropriate. But providing for explicit management direction, plan direction in statute is a major area of concern for us. But you've raised a critical point, and that's where we'd be interested in working on language in this bill to give the board the latitude. We don't have to count every wolf out there, and every moose calf, and every, and you don't, And that's really what our adversaries, when I say that, the antis, have forced us into this arena, as you well know. And they're doing it not just here in Alaska. They're doing it in Canada, the lower 48, and around the world. If you can't prove that there isn't that many, then we're not going to authorize you to engage in predator management. That equation has to be changed. And what's the appropriate answer? I can't give it to you right now, Senator, but I believe you're on the right track.
Thank you for that testimony, Mr. Clutch.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Elton.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Joe, just a real quick question, and you don't have to answer it now. You can maybe get back in touch with me, or you can get back in touch with the chair. If this bill has a further hearing in Senate Resources, would it be possible for you to get in touch with Mr. Horn to talk about his letter? I found his letter compelling, and to also discuss whether or not the sale of bear hides or other trophies could implicate in a bad way the guiding industry.
Mr. Chairman, yes, Senator, the bill is amenable to that on request, and I neglected to mention that one aspect of the bill about sale of hides and trophies. APHA has always been on the record opposing that. You'll probably hear another testimony, but certainly, yes, simple answer. I think it would be very beneficial for the committee to hear from Bill, and it would help inform us all.
Thanks, you. Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Senator Stedman.
Well, I was just checking the schedule.
We got three more people here, two in Juneau. But I do want to get the public hearing process over with on this bill.
Okay.
Next, we'll go to Gloria Strickwan. You're going to have to get closer to your mic or your phone.
I would like to say my concerns about this bill. Proposed bill. I'm looking at papers that were provided to me. I'm representing myself. I've got three papers that is in the state of Alaska, fiscal month. See, there's a company here about providing information. On an out to the board. I agree that the constrained traditional uses need to be updated, and I hope that that will pass. Money will be enough money in there to do the update from the database. In favor of that, and I'm concerned by how, based on what the restriction analysis was done by Fish and Game. Based on what I read,
Are you?
Gloria,
stop a minute. We can't make out what you're saying. You've got a real bad connection, or are you speaking by telephone?
Cost and more expense for our people to get a hunting license. I'm opposed to
Section 34, which states that people who apply for low-income license have to show the tax return before they can purchase the license. I'm opposed to that.
Gloria. Any questions? See none. Thank you. Thank you very much. Next, we'll go to Roland Ma.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, Senator. My name is Roland Ma. I live in Kissimmee, Alaska. I'm currently the executive director for the United Cook and the Drift Association. And the comments that I have on Bill 170, I know you're short on time. I'd like to separate the hunting issues from the sport fishing issues, or from the fishing issues, I guess. And in particular, I find the section number 9, or we find section number 9, section 11, and section 17 to be particularly troublesome, and feel that they need to have much broader discussion. And the I just think this is caused a lot of trouble. Now, from on section 9, where you talk about the expenditure for, this is on line 12, on the page I have it. Anyway, section 9 is in the middle of the new section. And it's under where it talks about expenditure for projects that directly benefit purchasers of. And I would just put in there sport fishing licenses separate from expenditures that do not directly or benefit. I don't know how you do that from a practical sense, where you would have a hatchery or an enhancement program that would be primarily designed for sport fishing as those fish come through a commercial fishery. I don't know how you separate that out, and vice versa. A project that's primarily designed for commercial fishing, we always put in there an allowance for the port harvest that's going to go on those docks. But I just find that section 9 particularly troublesome from that point of view. And in that same light, that's the problem that I see in section 11. And then on section 17, I think that one would cause some closures of some of our commercial fisheries. And I find that one particularly egregious. And do not support Bill 170 if those items are going to be left in. I fully support the comments of Paul Segura that were made earlier. And just on a personal note, I do not find the fees to be particularly egregious. Thank you.
Thank you. Which version are you looking at, Mr. Moss?
Well, the one I took off the internet just a little while ago. I might not have the up-to-date one.
On page 1,
okay.
Upper right-hand corner, should be a date there, and a number with a backslash and a letter.
I looked for that, Mr. Chairman, and I didn't see it on the page that I took off of the
okay.
The web page. So I don't know what version I got here. I'm sorry.
That's all right. We can figure it out.
Larry, you get the idea?
Yeah.
I don't know how you separate fish that come from different funding sources in a fishery, either for sport or commercial. I just don't know how you do that in a practical sense.
Right. Okay, thanks for testifying, Roland.
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to Ricky Geese.
Hi, my name is Ricky Geese. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I know you have a limited amount of time. We're getting near the end here. A couple points I'd like to point out. I would like to echo Paul Shadura's comments that the Board of Fisheries has a lot of spot on its plate currently, and I don't think it's effective to file more responsibilities on them. And we have some concerns for Section 2, where we're looking to achieve maximum sustained yield. I think there's some in the sports fisheries. There's some fisheries that are operating very well under optimum sustained yield, including fisheries on our wild trout. Also, we do manage for species that we don't harvest, such as northern pike on the Kenai Peninsula, and I would not want to limit the department's ability to manage for those fish. The other component that we have a problem with is Section 74. We do not support allowing the purchase or sale of sport fish or personal use fish. I think that would create some very severe law enforcement problems for the peninsula and our sockeye and king fisheries. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Geese? Section 74 you referred to, Ricky?
Yes, Section 74.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you.
With that, that's all the testimony we had online. We got two people here in Juneau, and we'll go ahead with them and then close public testimony. Joe Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Joel Bennett. I'm from Juneau, a 38-year resident, and I want to bring the perspective to the meeting of an ex-game board member. I served on the board between 1977 and 1990, over 13 years. And I just wanted to really home in on what I see as the most sweeping change that the bill makes, and that's in Section 4 and Section 18 of the sponsor substitute. You know, this is the section that essentially requires that all plans and guidelines that and strategies that basically establish or affect a management policy for fish and game be submitted to the boards by the department for approval. Now, this is unprecedented, and I can tell you from my service on the board that the time required to deal with just regular regulations at only two meetings a year, and that's remains to be the present schedule for the most part, is just about at the maximum limit that board members can handle to then require them to essentially review and approve day-to-day matters that the department has to grapple with that affect policies of fish and game is entirely unworkable from my point of view. I think if you talk to other members of both boards, there would be similar sentiment. I don't know if you realize, but the department system right now, the board system is not it's a lay board, we know that much, but you probably don't know that the board really has a revolving schedule and only considers regulations every 2 years for the different five regions and every 4 years for statewide regulations. So basically, even the nuts and bolts of what the board is supposed to do isn't reviewed at every meeting. And I think what this bill calls for, if it were to be implemented, is really a full-time board, and I can't address the cost ramifications of that, but I think the department could. But essentially it calls for a full-time board, which would mean then that it would be a professional board probably. It wouldn't be a lay member board that it's been since statehood, and essentially the whole system would change. None of that is in the bill as I see it. In other words, there's no revamping of the board system to accommodate that. So again, I think the key provision of the bill, the most sweeping provision, is the most defective provision. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Questions? Thank you very much. Thank you for your patience. Next, here you come.
What? How do you spell your last name?
Fithian.
F-I-T-H?
I-A-N.
Fithian. I-A-N. Okay. Go ahead, Bobby.
Thank you, Chairman Wagner and members of the Senate Resources Committee. My name is Bobby Fithian. I live in Lower Tonzina, Alaska. I represent the Alaska Professional Hunters Association as their executive director. We support the primary objective of SSB, or Senate Bill 170, which is to facilitate more active management of Alaska's fish and wildlife resources, provide management for abundance or maximum sustained yield. We especially support the provisions within the bill that call for changing the legal standard of review for entering into intensive management. That's one major step that this bill tries to make that would significantly aid in management for abundance. There are, however, several parts of the bill that we have serious concerns with, primarily the deleting of guide required law in intensive management units. You've heard a lot of testimony to that effect today, and I'll stay on that, except I'll add a little bit to it, in that realistically what we believe will happen to Alaska and to Alaska's hunters, whether they're resident hunters or subsistence hunters or whoever they are, that if we delete the guide required law in intensive management areas, that particular law sits pretty soundly in state statute. It has for 47 years. However, in federal law, federal constitutional law, it exists through a narrow window of allowance that the federal government allows states to manage their wildlife resources within. And the three factors that this particular piece of law are allowed through that narrow window of federal law are public safety, enforcement, and conservation. Our council has told us for 3 years in a row now that to deviate from the existing law and to allow for deletion of the guide required in intensive management areas and allow for non-resident hunters to be accompanied by resident hunters puts the scope of that activity beyond what the narrow window of allowance is in federal constitutional law. So if we were to pass this bill as written, we really run the risk, no question, of eliminating a $200 million a year industry, an industry that's been in Alaska for 100 years and has sustained itself in Alaska for 100 years. Additionally, what happens to the state when we lose the guide required law? If you could envision the public peoples of the United States and other countries that all would like to hunt here in Alaska, and you have that level of effort that it has desires to hunt here, the fence that stems that level of effort is the guide required law. The guide required law makes it mandatory that those people facilitate the services of a professional guide to hunt brown grizzly bear, sheep, and goat. Well, other states throughout the West have had to deal with this, and they haven't had the guide required provisions that Alaska had and does have. And what has happened is that those states have now developed into drawing permit states for any quality hunting opportunities. And in Alaska, we have all quality hunting opportunities. So it's a big difference in what we have to offer here versus many of the other states that are into drawing permit equations. The drawing permit equation then pits every Alaskan resident against every non-resident that wants to have opportunity to harvest one of these animals. And we just think that's too much of a loss for Alaska, not just for our industry, but for Alaska. So we have other concerns. We had a lot of talk today about license fee increases. APHA has gone on record for the last 3 years supporting non-resident fee increases. We support a 25% fee increase across the board in non-resident license fees and tags. We also state that it's time that Alaska stepped up to the plate. The non-resident has been carrying our wildlife conservation fees for many years. It's time that we as Alaskans start providing some adequate and equitable support for that effort, and we would encourage Mr. Chairman and this committee to think about resident license tag implementations. There is a serious part of the bill that has been little talked about today, and that is Section 74 that deals with the sale of trophies. I'm going to read from a sectional analysis that I just received that came from Fish and Game today, the department, their comments. And this parallels our concerns and our historical comments as well. The apparent intent of this section is to allow the sale of big game trophies, but the language allows the sale of any legally taken fish or game. As mentioned in comments on previous versions, this would include meat from game animals as well as parts such as gallbladders, claws, teeth, some which have a degree of market demand. This section could lead to market hunting, sale of fish caught for personal use, sport, or subsistence use. Moreover, and this is the important part from our consideration, is that it turns all cases into commerce, thus bringing Alaska within the scope of case law limiting states' abilities to regulate interstate commerce. This imperils all of Alaska's existing preferences and quotas for residents, including but not limited to limiting subsistence uses to residents, reserving drawing permit quotas to residents, and closing non-resident uses before closing resident uses. I'd like to talk a little bit about brown bear conservation history. 1925, the newly formed Alaska Game Commission, their first order of business was to ban the harvest of brown bears for the sale of their hides. 20-some years later, 1957, the same Game Commission made it illegal to harvest a maternal female bear statewide. Again, this is related to brown grizzly bears. In 1958, they made it illegal to harvest a cub bear statewide. In 1964, there started the implementation of the provision requiring it made it illegal to harvest a bear the same day that you were airborne. And in 1967 was the adoption of a one bear every 4 years for resident and non-resident hunters. That started that implementation. And through the late 80s, with those conservation measures in place, there created in Alaska a widespread distribution and enhanced ungulate numbers throughout the state. We had never seen such numbers of moose, sheep, and caribou. Those numbers all exploded and became unique to Alaska during the era that we had real good sound bear conservation. It was the loss of our ability to control the wolves that were brought on by different lawsuits and ballot measures during the 1980s that started the spiraling decline in those ungulate populations. Those initiatives were brought on by anti-hunters and animal rights organizations. This particular bill we have in front of us should have brought them to the forefront of their concerns, but they're not here. The reason being is that we are all right where they want us to be. We are all hunters. We're unique Alaskans that love our resources. We love the privileges and opportunities we have here, but we're here fighting amongst ourselves for what's left. If we were to turn together in relationship to this bill and expend our energies on focusing on the efforts that put us into this room, I believe that we can overcome those. I especially like Senator Seekins' focus on looking at the entrance to intensive management. So we are major stakeholders, and this bill has far-reaching provisions proposed, and we offer ourselves available to help the senator from Fairbanks with any future help, concerns, or questions with this bill. Time is short here. I think I've hit the majority of our concerns. Regarding division of subsistence, we know that there's considerable failure in that arena, and this bill addresses that, and we are very much in favor of that. And we encourage the reining in of the division of subsistence and the developing of truthful accountability for the amount necessary numbers that are being used to accommodate the needs and concerns of those true subsistence users. And ongoing efforts, I think this is important. APHA has been working historically with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and with the Board of Game, working with our existing mechanisms and processes, and we are gaining some ground. A lot of it is due to Senator Seekins and his effort to make available, once again, our ability to harvest wolves. And in GMU 13, where I live, we've harvested over 300 wolves in the last 3 years, a substantial number of bears. Those people involved in science and biology in that area are seeing a significant increase in the numbers of the cow-calf recruitment, the numbers of moose, and the numbers of caribou. In GMU 16, the west side of Cook Inlet, the average harvest of brown grizzly bears from 1999 through 1993-94 season was 81 bears a year. Last year, the 1994-95 harvest was 120 bears, almost a 50% increase in the harvest of bears in that predator management area due to liberalization of means and methods and harvest opportunities that the Board of Game has created currently. So the Board of Game is working hard to accommodate these needs. Again, giving the Department of Fish and Game additional support that they need to have the funding to sustain some level of science, to be able to recognize perils and downslides in game populations and to be able to respond to them equitably makes good sense to us. Additionally, the Big Game Commercial Services Board, I want to compliment the senators in this room and this legislative body for allowing the creation of this Big Game Commercial Services Board. They've been in session a total of 6 days. They've made significant baby steps forward that have resulted in some large strides for accountability of this industry, the transporter industry, and the sustainability of those industries. But most importantly, regarding SB 170, they have created, again, this was through a measure that Senator Seekins worked hard to get provided in the bill that created that board, a window of opportunity for guides to have additional guide use areas. They're restricted to 3 guide use areas per year. But due to the language that, again, Senator Seekins was instrumental in getting put into that bill, the bill provided for professional, master, and registered guides to utilize additional guide use areas for the harvest of bears in predator management areas. And now that created a very new dynamic window of opportunity for professional guides to start operating outside of their old realms and be able to help aid in these predator-prey ratio problems and start harvesting some bears from these intensive management, predator management areas. Additionally, the Alaska Professional Hunters Association has taken some significant measures. We now have a wolf harvest dividend program in effect where we pay X amount of dollars for each ground-based wolf that's harvested in certain areas. And we actually got the mandatory amount of wolves harvested in GMU 19A this year. We reached that about 3 weeks ago, and it was almost 60% aerial supported hunting and 40% trapping. All those people received extra money, the ground supported trapping efforts from APHA. And we now have a non-resident hunter preservation fund that members of our organization that contribute to this, they receive a certain amount of money from each client they book. Those monies all go into a pool that we in turn are wanting to work with Department of Fish and Game with in relation to science and biology needs. So I know time is short, and that concludes my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you very much for being patient enough to sit here and go through all this with us. Senator Seekins had a question.
Just one quick question. Robert, are you familiar with the Ballard study on the effect of bear predation on moose calf survival?
Not well enough to say that I have good knowledge of it, Senator.
And the results of the relocation of the bears in the McGrath area?
I'm very much familiar with that.
The effect that had on moose mm-hmm. calf survival? Okay, that's all.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to move the bill today. It's quite apparent there's 3 of us left. I'm not going to move it anyway, but I'm going to get with the bill sponsor, and I'm going to get with the Commissioner of Fish and Game, and we're going to discuss this, and maybe we may want to get in contact with you too.
We're readily available.
So, okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are we going to recess?
No, we're going to.
On the other bill, or are we going to wait until Monday?
We're going to wait until next week if we go in 24-hour. I want to apologize to those folks who are here to hear Senate Bill 314. We have another meeting we're supposed to be at 40 minutes ago. But so I am not going to be able to hold hearings today on Senate Bill 314. We may do that next week if we have time and we go on 24-hour notice, and we'll notify those of you who want to take part in that hearing. With that, we're going to adjourn.